man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the DBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come in?
Point of order.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amro. We've got a very, very special edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly for you guys this week. It all focuses around former President Jacob Zuma and his appearance before this Commission of Inquiry into State Capture. It's been a marathon 3 days since Monday, since the former president has first appeared. Lots of news around it. The whole country is talking about it. And now we're on a break because the former president's legal teams say that no, he's not happy with the questioning that the commission has leveled against him, and they need to find a way forward. But before we get into that, let's get into our session for the week. I'm joined by my colleagues in studio, Zingisa Mvumvu and Zimasa Matsuwane. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. I'm sure you guys have seen what's been happening. It's been an interesting couple of days, hasn't it?
The first one was interesting. The rest were boring.
Yeah.
It has been somewhat of an anti-climax, wasn't it?
Was.
Yeah, it is.
Because I remember when I walked in here on Monday to where the State Capture Commission's being held, there's so much buzz. I mean, there's police cars outside, everything's cordoned off, buses coming in, accreditation is now being held off-site to get into the commission, security everywhere, I see state security badges, hundreds of medias, cameras everywhere, and then you get there and it's like, ha. Is this all that you came here to say?
Yeah, no.
But true. The former president had a lot to answer for, guys. I mean, he was implicated directly by about 9 people who previously testified before the State Capture Inquiry. One of them was Themba Maseko, who was the former government communication and information system boss. So I'm not going to focus on all 9 people now because Zuma hasn't responded to all of them. He's responded to allegations by Themba Maseko and by allegations by former public enterprises minister Barbara Hogan. Mm-hmm. And that's all he's gone. It's taken 3 days to get to that point. And it seems like the former president is itching to speak about Gordon.
Understandably so.
Before we get into that, let's go on to Themba Maseko and Zuma's first day before the inquiry. Now, he denied everything flatly. Now, Themba Maseko told the commission that in 2010, while he was in charge of GCIS, he received a lot of pressure from the Gupta family to meet with them. And on the day where he finally said, okay, fine, I'll meet with you guys, he got a call from the president, Zuma at the time, who said, listen, you need to help these guys out. And then when he got to Sachsenwald to see the Guptas wanted GCIS's entire 600 million rand budget to be moved over to the Infinity Media assets. That was ANN7 and the New Age at the time. ANN7 wasn't a thing. And he said later, after a couple of days, after not complying with the Guptas, he got another message from the president. He got a call from Ajay Gupta saying that, listen, if you don't comply with us, we're going to go straight to your seniors in government, who at the time was Collins Chabane, the minister in the presidency, and to the president, and we're going to rat you out. And then, as we know, Maseko was sort of moved around after that, taken out of GCIS. And I think, as we all expected, Zuma didn't have much to say. He said, well, I don't remember making the call. If I did make the call, I wouldn't have said that. But if I did, But this is what we've come to expect from the president, is it not? He was never going to tell us, yes, I did it. You know, what do you think?
Yeah. Look, okay, we were on Maseko for now. Okay, yeah. I'll talk about the issues as we get through them. Look, I mean, it was always going to be, I don't know. For me, it's not so difficult to prove, but that's the other thing. The commission is not yet, it's not a court of law, so it's not yet to prove whether something happened or it didn't. Because, I mean, Maseko is basing his claims on the fact that he received a call from someone in the president, and the former president was put on the line, and he asked him to call. I mean, and Zuma in the commission used, you know, technicalities to sort of, he didn't deny, as you say, it's strange that he didn't deny that the call happened. Instead, he used technicalities of the wedding.
Yes.
And perhaps Maseko as well was a bit clumsy or excited to quote Zuma as if he's quoting him verbatim.
Yes.
Because, for instance, he said in that Zulu thing that he said, Mfanageti says that Mfana Maseko baga quote Mfana Mfogababa says. And then Zuma is saying, I never use Mfogababa. The closest word I used to that is Mfanageti. And Maseko, I think, in his testimony, should have said that the man said something along these lines. You see, now it's technicalities that I never use this term. But if Maseko had said that, he said something along these lines, so it wouldn't, there wouldn't be ground for technicality to say, no, but this man, even if I spoke to him, I would never use such words. So I feel like Zuma saw that gap and took advantage, you know, on it. So it's quite interesting. So it's going to be his word against his word. He's not denying that the conversation happened. He's sort of denying the things that Maseko say he said by saying that he would never. But you see, again, on Maseko's testimony, the strength of it is that the former president has agreed that he indeed participated in the formation of the new age. So that links up very nicely with the testimony that was led by Themba Maseko. So on that one, I think at least there's a headway in terms of things that are making sense.
I think let's do it like this then. This may make more sense. Let's look at what's sticking to the president and what's not sticking to him.
Yeah.
So let's leave the testimonies aside. So we've heard Zuma's replies to Themba Maseko. We've heard his replies to Barbara Hogan. Now, Hogan accused him of sort of interfering with the appointments of executives to various SOEs. And then we heard evidence from Fakie Mentor, what Zuma replied to as well. And Zuma said, I mean, sorry, Fakie Mentor said that she was offered a position of public enterprises minister by the Guptas at the Saxon Wealth Home in 2010. And Zuma was apparently present in the house when that offer was made. Now, Zuma has, to all three of these allegations, said, absolute bullshit. It never happened. I can't recall. I don't remember. But nothing is sticking. Now, let's talk about that. Because it's easy for the president to say, the former president to say, I can't remember. I don't recall. It never happened. But he's never given an alternative version of events. He's never said, according to this, on this day, actually, I wasn't here. Or maybe I was out of the country when Fakie Mentor was saying this is happening. But the thing is, the commission doesn't have what I've seen. They don't have direct evidence on the former president to say...
And he knows it.
Yes, and he knows it. So you can easily dismiss it.
Yeah.
They don't say, look...
And he knows
it.
Yeah. Look, he's, if he's being accused of something, then the onus is on the accuser to bring the proof.
Yes.
He can just say, no, I don't recall. Mm. And you are not going to surgically get into his brain and look if the memory is still there or not.
This is the
there
thing,
is nothing
Zuma,
you can do.
This is the thing. Who then do we... Do we blame the commission for not having enough evidence, or do we blame Zuma for taking the easy way out? Or should we even be blaming Zuma? I mean, if he doesn't remember, he doesn't remember. There's nothing compelling him to give an answer.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. I wouldn't incriminate myself either. Okay. I think we expected him to not remember and not recall and not know anything about anything. Mm. But I think what shocked everyone initially was him admitting that he participated in, you know, from... conceptualizing alternative media, which was supposed to be a government propaganda machine while he was president.
Yeah.
So that I believe that is why the Themba Maseko part of the commission makes sense. However, when he said he could not recall, what I saw interesting, especially on social media, were a lot of MECs were saying, look, when you are in this kind of power, you meet a lot of people. Everyone has a business idea.
Yes.
Everyone wants funding. Everyone. Mm. And you refer them to officials in government. It's not unheard of that it happens. It does not mean Zuma is corrupt. But what is also strange in the Zuma case is that he had direct benefit in the new age and NN7 getting funding, performing well, and pushing his propaganda while he was president, because it was formed by him, you know. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I agree. I agree with what Uzumasa is saying, that, I mean, the only difference here is that really he benefited. In fact, he conceptualized the idea. But I think the fact that he actually admitted to it, you see, it's one thing. On an ethical basis, he may have been wrong, but legally, is it illegal to...
That's the question we have to ask ourselves.
You see, is it illegal to suggest to people, to business, that as a country this is what we need, and if you guys have got the resources and will to do it, I give you the go-ahead to do it. In fact, I'm giving you this idea. Is it illegal? I think that's the gray area, and I think he knows it may not necessarily be illegal. Ethically, it may be wrong in that he benefited in the form of that. But again, in the, on the benefiting as well, would he have not benefited? He was the president of the country. They had to be reporting on him. You see, so it's a very touch and go kind of a situation, hence the admission on his side. I doubt he would have admitted if he had even knew that this is absolutely illegal. It's something that would land him into trouble. And you see, as Zuma is saying, already people in that space are saying, not necessarily, it's not necessarily something that is wrong. I mean, you refer people to people in administration to assist them if what they presented to you makes sense.
And but Zuma is the Teflon Don, and the commission should have known this, that nothing sticks to the guy.
Yeah.
I would have expected I would have expected that the commission would have came with all the evidence this week to say, listen, this is what this witness said. Here is what we have to show it. Respond to this. Or here is what Fakey Mentor said. Okay, there's been some issues here, but can you explain this? Or can you explain that? It's just asking him, do you think it happened or did not happen? It's too easy for him to say, no, it didn't, because there's no direct evidence.
You see, sorry, I meant to cut you. I have a problem with how the commission is conducting its business. Yeah. First of all, I don't know. I think the commission is a bit confused now as to what they are really looking for. Yeah. First of all, they don't seem to be having proper and rigid rules that apply to everyone.
Of course.
The fact that before former President Zuma came here, there was that tit for tat exchanges between the legal team of the commission and his legal team on whether he must be sent questions or not. If there are established rules, if there are terms of reference, they should apply to everyone equally.
Yes.
Second, he came. When he came, he was given a platform to have a monologue.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and a monologue to a certain degree, I must point out, that seemed to be very irrelevant to the issues
on the table. We're going to get into that. Yeah.
So I think the commission also is really complicated the whole situation. And then we come to questions. And then now he also wants to determine, since you say now we have taken a break because he's not comfortable in the manner in which he is questioned. And I can tell you now, I strongly believe that the commission may actually ban here to have him come back again and to continue in his way. And I think that on its own is very problematic, and it may create problems for the commission going forward with other witnesses as well with this kind of behavior.
For me, the problem here was where it all started, with this invitation to the former president to come in and speak. Why didn't you just subpoena him from the outset?
Yep.
If he didn't want to comply, you subpoena him and take it through a court process. Giving him an open invitation to come here gives him the sort of vision that, or the feeling that he can come here and do whatever he wants to do. And that's exactly what he did. He came here and he gave a five-hour-long monologue, as you said.
It was five hours.
And we'll get into that now. But he gave his monologue, and then it was time for him to face questions. And that's where all the trouble started. He didn't expect to face questions. He expected for him to come and sit down. And for them to put the allegations to him. Themba Maseko said this, Barbara Hogan said this, he gives a nice reply, and then he gets to go on another rant. I think that's exactly what he wanted, but now that he's not getting it, now his lawyers are arguing that, hey, listen, hold on, you're cross-examining my client.
Yeah.
You didn't call him in here for a cross-examination. You called him in to give his version of events.
Yeah.
And that's where the problems are arising from.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to take
So if he was called to give his version of events, I believe that's what the monologue was for. So he gave his version of events of why there is this concept of state capture and why he's associated with it, or he's seen as the architect of it. But then, okay, now we move on.
Yeah,
you were implicated here. Then what do you say? How do you answer for yourself? What is the problem?
That's the thing. That's what we can't try to figure out. I mean, what is the problem? Why can't Zuma just answer the questions? You know, if he's got nothing to hide, why doesn't he just answer the questions?
But you see, again, I mean, as we said, Zondo as well, as you correctly put it now, by saying, as you say, he should have subpoenaed him if he refused to come, instead of saying, because now Zondo became nice and say, I'm inviting you to give a version of it. Actually, Advocate Sikakane, the legal head of Zuma's legal team, has got every right to throw his toys like he's doing now, because the invitation was that you are here to give your version of events.
Exactly.
And they want him to stick to that. And it seems, in a way, Zondo, by bending the rules a bit, wanted to trap them. And they are not falling into that trap.
Okay, we're going to take a quick short break. And when we get back, we're going to get into Zuma's big monologue on his first day of testimony about the 30-year... the 30-year long crusade to have him ousted and taken out of power. Wait for us when we get back.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
To advertise on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za.
Okay, welcome back. So let's talk about day one of Zuma's testimony, where he claimed, and let's talk about the first big claim that caused a bit of shockwaves, that Nkwako Ramahlodi, his former cabinet minister, was an apartheid spy. That was a bit sensational, was it not? Zuma, so what do you think?
I don't even want to entertain that. I don't entertain spy allegations from people who were in exile together, who did things together. Because here's the thing, I mean, you can never prove or disprove that someone was a spy. It's the easiest way to smear someone's character.
Yeah.
So the...
And you know, to accuse a freedom fighter or someone who played a part in an anti-apartheid struggle, to call him a spy, I think that must be the most demeaning and hurtful thing you can ever say to a person.
If the person was not a spy.
If they weren't a spy.
Which is a big if, because we will never know. The people who know the spies for sure, beyond doubt, are the apartheid government.
Absolutely.
So maybe Zondo must subpoena the Mbandla in the Mbandla at the Glek to come and give us
the list of people they had.
People that they had who infiltrated the freedom fighters. These are the people that were in our payroll. These are the spies that are still active and working for us, if that is still a thing.
Yes.
They are still in the ANC. They've been ministers. They've been looking under resources of the country. If Nwako is a spy, that's the only way we will believe it.
Yes.
If Zuma is saying it, I'm not going to believe it.
You see, I agree with Zuma. It's very difficult to prove or disprove whether it's a spy. Actually, as Zuma is saying, it's the easiest way to smear someone. But also, it's so easy such that during the struggle itself, within the ANC, the apartheid security branch used to spread lies among some ANC comrades to say so and so, just to create discontent and confusion over each other
killed.
And distrust over comrades. The comrades that were killed because there was information that were spies, and in actual fact, that was not the case. And Zuma is correct to say we will never know for sure. Yes, former President Jacob Zuma is the former chief of intelligence of the ANC. There are certain things. It would also be naive to disprove his allegations completely. But as Zimasa is saying, the intelligence world is very difficult to take the word of one person. It's also difficult and naive to ignore the word of a particular person. So it's very difficult, but I think Zuma wanted that monologue to deal with these people. You remember Nkwako Ramahlodi, when he came here, he was one of the people who were very hard-hitting.
Yes,
so you can see... It's,
he said that Zuma auctioned off the
country.
So it's a bit of... It's personal.
And
Zuma took issue with that. And you see, that's the thing, Amelia. These are comrades. These are comrades who happen today to be in different factions of the ANC. The ANC factions are going to finish us off.
Yeah. But this is the thing.
That ANC thing is dangerous.
Let's look at what Zuma said, right? He said there was an almost 30-year-long character assassination campaign to have him ousted from leadership positions in the ANC and government. And he said it dates back to the early 1990s when he was chief of intelligence. And he received a report, another intelligence report that we've never seen, saying that there were three intelligence organizations, two of them foreign and one local, that had met and plotted a process, and I quote, of character assassination against Zuma. And now he blamed everything over his entire tenure on this character assassination plot.
What I still don't have an answer to is why.
And why, once you got into power, did you not try to stop
this
attempt?
At the beginning, why? What was the reason?
Mm.
Yeah, well, he is saying they saw that he had, well, according to him, he says they saw that he had a lot of support within the ANC, particularly in KZN.
And he had a lot of information on spies in the ANC.
That they had within the ANC, and that he would then reveal them.
Out them.
Yeah, out them, and then therefore compromising whatever mission that they had. But one thing for sure, Amir, I can guarantee you, I don't have proof, but the ANC is infiltrated. I cannot point out this, but I don't have names. The ANC is infiltrated.
I think we all have that.
You heard it here first.
Once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, other than Zuma. We all know what Zuma said, right? And we all knew how he's used this plot to sort of excuse what happened in the arms deal, what happened with Nkandla. He's saying it's all this big character assassination plot, right? But what does it mean? Does it mean, one, that we're dealing with a person here who is so paranoid and in his mind believes that his entire career has been sabotaged? Two, are we dealing with someone who's finding an easy way out of convenience? Or three, should we believe the former president when he starts to talk about these things? Is there any basis? Where do we start to analyze this?
I don't think the former president ever left the world of intelligence, and those people are super paranoid.
Yeah. But besides Zim paranoia, I doubt Zuma is paranoid. He is just because,
just a master tactician?
And intelligence people also, intelligence is about manipulating information. Zuma, I agree with Zuma that he has never left the intelligence world. Of course, he may not be an official spook, but he still believes in that kind of culture, information manipulation. And he's the guy who's always won. As you said to yourself, he's like a MacGyver of sort. He always survives, and he survives on always getting the story to be on his side. So also his strategy coming here of all these revelations and painting himself as a guy who is a victim of a long conspiracy process against him is part of that tact. And the Zuma tact as we know it. I mean, he was never going to come here. And Zuma knows. For instance, Zuma has already benefited from the victimhood card that he has played, that he continues
from
to play.
From coming here, he has already benefited massively.
That same card is the one that elevated him. Because you'd remember Zuma's popularity reached its peak. Mm. He's always, of course, as he says, he's always had a solid support base within the ANC. But it reached its peak after 2005, when he was fired as the deputy president of the country, when he faced those rape allegations and all those things, and then building up to Polokwane, where he again came with this narrative that I am being dealt with, I am a threat because of this, they don't want me to get to the top office. He was a victim, and everyone, ANC, within the ANC, the bigger of the ANC, SACP, COSATU, everyone rallied against behind him, and he got to the high office. And then today, it's no coincidence again that he's using the same thing, because South Africans generally have got this thing of aligning with victims.
Yeah.
I think it's something that he has mastered. He's read whatever book he has read, that victimhood will make you win. And I believe, for me, that is why he's coming with this strategy. Not to say that everything he's saying is absolutely not true, but in terms of the conspiracy, I really don't believe there could be
It's not for us to decide whether what Zuma is saying is true or
not. Yeah.
That's the commission's job. So I don't want to get involved with arguments I see on social media with people saying, we can't believe him because he's untrustable, we can't believe him because he has this reputation. That's not for us to decide. The commission will come out with a report.
Yeah.
So let's just take what he said on face value now, right? That's exactly what the commission is doing. They're taking what he's saying on face value, and they'll make a recommendation and findings on that afterwards. So we know that so far, what we know from the commission so far is two things. One, Zuma believes that he's been character assassinated throughout his entire tenure, right? Two, he denies everything that has been said against him so far is true by the witnesses that he's testified, that have testified against him, and he's responded to. There's only been three. All right, so now where from here? So what's happened today is that when the commission starts asking Zuma questions about Barbara Hogan and the processes and normal processes and procedures that should follow when appointing someone to the executive of a state-owned entity, Zuma got very confused. He started saying he can't remember, he doesn't know about reports, but it's true. As a president, you deal with thousands and hundreds of reports on a monthly basis. So, of course, he wouldn't know, but the commission wasn't holding it against him. But he felt at some point that the commission might hold it against him, and he felt he was being sort of, and there was a bias against him there. So he raised the issue.
Mm.
The commission went on a break, discussed with their lawyers, and it sort of blew out of control. And what it seems to happen is what's going to happen now is that the commission is going to break on Thursday and maybe resume on Friday if Zuma's lawyers and the commission's lawyers can come to some sort of way to resolve this impasse. But we've got to ask ourselves our questions, and what exactly does Zuma want here? Because is this the beginning of Zuma trying to dismantle the commission's findings against him? Because we can't argue that, it would be very easy to argue that there's a campaign here from the Zuma side to sort of place the commission as biased from the outset so that later when it makes findings against him, he can say that, listen, I came here willingly, I gave you some information, you then treated me unfairly, and then I left. Because we see people like Carl Niehaus outside here. Anything the commission does, he's out here speaking to the media. We see Ace Makashule, we see Des van Rooyen, we see all Zuma supporters and massive campaigns around the commission and hinging on every single word the former president says. So is there more to the story than just Zuma appearing before the commission now?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. I mean, as I said before, at the center of everything that happens in this country is always two ANC factions fighting over control of state resources. And now, the faction that sympathizes with the former President Zuma, they believe, or they want us to believe, that he is being dealt with by the other faction, which is the incumbent regime of President Cyril Ramaphosa and those that think alike with him. And therefore, now that they no longer have control over state resources, as you say, you put the likes of Des van Rooyen from minister to being chairpersons of portfolio committees. Madusi Kigabo was here the other day, from minister to being someone who doesn't even have a role. We don't know why he was here, you know. Carl Niehaus, well, my goodness, I don't even know. You know, so all those things. So these people are on the outside of the state resources gravy train.
Yeah.
And they will not rest until such time that they are back inside. That's what how the ANC functions. So it is indeed a meal bigger than just Zuma coming here. It's their strategy. You are correct by saying part of their strategy would be that they want to discredit the commission, to say that it was biased against him. On top of that, it may be with Zuma's monologues and dropping those things that in a way don't seem to be related to this, it's their way of fighting back to say that, because they believe that the incumbent faction is behind the revelations that are in this commission, their way of hitting back would be to use the same platform to hit back, so that at the end, when there are findings that are not against the people that they've hit back, if be it it's smear that is true or not true, then they can have a case to say, as we had said, that this commission was about this man, and we have told you this information, but you chose to ignore our information, but you took their information. So it's a far bigger fight than just this commission that is
It's here. Also not, it's also not even about the long plan of how to deal with the findings when the findings eventually do come. It's about the perception too. An ANC member sitting at home watching the commission. Here is this man that, as an ANC member, maybe I voted for in Polokwane and in Mangaung. He was a man of the people. He was a humble president. You know, he built us a school. He could relate to us. Here he's being humiliated.
Yeah.
It's not by the commission in the minds of a lot of South Africans who sympathize with Zuma.
Yeah.
It's by the ANC faction of Cyril Ramaphosa. So now when you have all these people rallying around Zuma, Ace is a Zuma man. He's powerful at Luthuli House. Carl is there with the MKMVA. But when you see Omalusi, who are young in the ANC, who are nowhere in cabinet, you see Odez, who used to be ministers. So now you say, these people, when you look at them collectively, they've been purged, they've been removed.
Mm.
These are the good guys. The bad guys are now in government. So we need now to deal with the bad guys. Mm. How? Through ANC processes. That's another perception that you are creating.
Yeah. And I mean, with that, in terms of the ANC politics, and also there's this NGC that is coming next year.
The boogeyman.
That NGC, and we know, we have discussed it here before, what Zuma had said about the NGC. So, you see, there could be a far bigger strategy here to take control back of both the ANC and the state. Well, to a certain degree, I would claim that they still have control of the ANC. They just want the control of the state once again. So it's a multi-pronged strategy. Hence, you see all these things that are happening, the sideshows and all those things. But I guess only time will tell.
You see the likes of Carl Niehaus calling on the ANC to investigate these allegations that there are spies within the ANC. Mm. And you are putting the ANC of Ramaphosa under pressure to go on a wild goose chase about something that can probably never be proven by them. Mm. Carl knows that.
Yeah.
He's not stupid. He's saying to ANC members, this is the guy who is refusing to tell you
who are the spies
in the ANC, and that is implying that Ramaphosa knows who the spies are, or he is even one of the spies, because the allegation has been made against him in parliament too.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not just about Zondo. Zondo is a small fish.
Yeah.
The big fish is the control of the state.
Okay. Yeah.
Resources.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining us in studio, guys, and thanks for everyone who's listening. Remember, if you want to follow us...
Let's play a bet who thinks Mama is going to come back on Friday.
Oh, yeah. We should do that, actually. I'm putting $100 on the table now that he's probably not going to, but if he does come back, it's going to be on his terms.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's going to come back and say, listen, this is our prediction.
If he doesn't come back, they are going to say the commission prevented him from making revelations about Pravin.
You can see it in his face. He's waiting to come and speak about Ravi.
Yeah, so you see, it's a high level mind game, my brother. Play mind games.
Yeah. Anyway, follow us on hashtag #STPoliticsWeekly on Twitter, and we'll all be interacting there. Thank you so much for the support, and hopefully next week when we get back, we'll have more to talk about when it comes to Zuma at the State Capture Inquiry, and this just won't be the end of it. Join us then.
Bye.